I want to invite you to turn in your Bible to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5 will be in verse 13 through 16 this morning. Before we go on, I just want to say, Lynn, thank you for those words this morning around the table. I just really appreciate the thoughtfulness that those who lead us in our reflection, our time around the table, I appreciate all that you guys do. So thanks so much for blessing us today. I really appreciated those words. What a beautiful time together. Well, I spend a lot of time doing things with my son, and I do things that he enjoys, and so we're kind of in the middle of a season of life where theme songs from children's TV shows and things like that get stuck in my head, and so when I'm preparing, inevitably, usually those are some of the things that come to my mind as I think about how to begin a lesson and how to maybe engage your attention. It just happens. I try to section that part of my brain off and say, they don't want to hear the theme to Sesame Street. They don't want to hear the theme to Thomas the Train. They just want you to get up and teach the word. But I can't help it. So this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about Where's Waldo? Anybody a fan of Where's Waldo? If you're not familiar with Where's Waldo, it's a book, and you open it up, and there are these pictures, and these pictures are filled with all kinds of people and things happening, carnivals and people at the beach, and the goal is to find Waldo. Where's Waldo? And so that's what Waldo looks like, so we're going to play around here and see if you can find where he is, all right? So there's the picture. You can't see that, can you? All right, who thinks they see where he is? Some of you are like, give me time, I need time. Anybody know where he is? Raise your hand if you found him. Sarah, where is he? In the corner? Like right there? That's not him. He's not wearing the hat. That looks like him. That's close. Okay, here you go. There he is. Don't you just hate it when that happens? Well, there's Waldo. And then this lesson this morning also made me think of this. So there's Waldo. And then I was thinking about Sesame Street, about one of these things is not like the other. You remember this? Does anybody know the song? Okay, one of these things is not like the other. And typically is four things, and three of them are the same, and a fourth one is not the same. So can anybody identify which of these things is not like the other? Okay, very good. These contrasts bring up an important question for us this morning. And hopefully it'll make sense in a second. When it comes to us being like Jesus in the world, what does the world see? Are we like Waldo, where the world has a difficult time seeing any difference between us and our surroundings? Or are we different? Are we like the one thing that's not like the others? Can the world around us see that there's something different in us? And is that difference something appealing, or is it something appalling? Simply put, if the world is aching for God's grace and love and justice and mercy, are they experiencing those things in us? Because if they aren't, something has gone terribly wrong. So from Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus continues on in this Sermon on the Mount, he says this of us: you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Jesus says that we are salt and light. And these are powerful metaphors. These metaphors teach us and tell us much about what Jesus is inviting us to in his kingdom. I think we're all pretty familiar with light, but I thought I'd point out some different uses for salt to sort of draw out some of the significance here of what Jesus is saying about us. The first is that salt preserves. In the ancient world, people would preserve meat. They didn't have refrigerators. And so once an animal had been slaughtered, meat would go bad within a matter of days, right? And to prevent that from happening, to slow the rotting process down, to be a little graphic, they would pack the meat in salt. And the salt would preserve the meat. It would keep it from decaying and rotting. And so maybe one of the things that Jesus means when he says that you are salt is that you are to be the kind of people who, in the world, as the world seems to fall apart, as the world seems to rot away and decay from sin and brokenness, you are to be the kinds of people that preserve what is good and true and right in the world. And not necessarily just as people who are guardians of truth, who stand behind a fortress wall, saying, we've got the truth, come in here and be like us, but people who, by our impact, make the world good and full of life, not prone to decay and to rot. Second use of salt that maybe Jesus is talking about is that salt heals. Salt was used in the ancient world as a natural defense against infection and disease. And in the same way, we, filled with the Spirit of God, can be a healing agent in the world through our words and our actions. Salt creates thirst, right? What do you do when you go to a restaurant? They bring you chips and salsa, or they bring you something salty. Why do they do that? Because it makes you thirsty, and then they want you to order drinks, right? That's why they do that. It's not just because they're nice and want to give you free stuff. It's because they want to get your money. Salt creates thirst. And when you are so full of God's transforming love, I think Jesus invites us to imagine people will develop a thirst for what is good and true. And maybe even perhaps ask questions. Why is it that your life is different? What is it about your life that makes you the way that you are? I want what you have. Salt is a catalyst. God often uses his people to bring about change in the world. At least when we're on our game, when we're following Jesus and doing what he says, and when we're listening to the truth of God's word, that oftentimes God uses us as a catalyst to bring about change in the world. It was Christian people who stood up in England and in other places around the world in the 19th century and who started to say that slavery is wrong, that owning other human beings and forcing them into labor, that is not right. And it took a long time, actually, in this country for people to come to the same conclusion. And sadly, here in America, a lot of Christians were on the opposite side. They were not part of the catalyzing work of God. They were on the wrong side of history and of truth, because of blindness. And when we let God do what he wants to do in us, we will be a catalyst for righteous change in the world. And so that's an invitation to think about, are we on the wrong side of history with anything today? And do we need to confront systems of injustice that harm people? How can we be a part of that as salt in the world? Salt also gives flavor and zest. Isn't that a great word, zest? It makes me think of a spice shaker, right? When people are around us, they should taste God's goodness. Simply put, we're here to make everything around us better. The world should be thankful for the Christians in their midst. Now, I know that that's probably not how the world sees us a lot of times, but that's the way it's supposed to be. If we're truly living out the way of Jesus, there will be many in the world who are broken down by life who will see in us good news, flavor, and zest. What good news? Well, those are some of the uses of salt that maybe Jesus meant as he talks about salt and as he talks about light. And these two things are true of both salt and light. They are separate and distinct from the things around them, right? Salt is different than not salt. Thank you. It's been very good. Light is different from darkness, right? These are simple things we understand. They are separate. They are distinct. And yet, unless these separate and distinct entities are penetrating the world around them, the environment around them, then they have no effect, right? Jesus points this out. If salt isn't really salty, then it doesn't matter. You can sprinkle as much as you want on your food or as much as you want on a wound or whatever use you would use, and it's not going to do anything. It's got to engage. It's got to be separate and distinct, and at the same time, it has to penetrate the things around it, or it doesn't do any good. You don't take a light and put a bowl on top of it, right? Because that keeps the light bound up in something and it is not able to penetrate the darkness around. You need both. If you have one without the other, you're missing it. The power of us being salt and light means that we stand out from the world. But it also means that we make the world better by engaging with the world. If we have one without the other, then we're not being who we were called to be. And when that's the case, it's probable that we're making one of the three following mistakes. First one is being chameleons, right? You know these little lizards? Chameleons can blend into their background and not be noticed, right? That's the first mistake we make in trying to be salt and light, what Jesus says that we are. We are being in the world, but not in a distinct way as salt and light. And that means that when we do that, we forfeit the power of our identity and our ability to make the world the way God wants it. And at that point, we're merely part of the world. Paul warns us about this in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. He starts off, he says, "Look, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." Paul is saying, look, don't blend in. Be different. Be distinct. Shine and taste different than the world around you. Maybe one of the problems with Christians today in our culture is maybe too many of us, I won't say them out there because I think I'm talking about us. Maybe I look too much like the world around me in what I say and what I believe, in the goals that I pursue for my own life. Paul says, don't conform to the pattern of the world. Don't be a chameleon. If you do that, you're being salt that has lost its saltiness. You're being a light that's so dim that no one can tell that it's illuminating the darkness. Second mistake we can make is being a spiritual ghetto, a bubble. Being different from the world but not engaging it means we're living in a spiritual bubble and not living as witnesses to God's goodness. Jesus, when he's praying to God for his disciples in John chapter 17, right before he goes to the cross, he says, "I've given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of it." Jesus is saying to God, God, look, I'm not asking you to take my followers out and just protect them in a nice little bubble where they never engage the world. I do want you to protect them from the evil one, but I'm not asking you to take them out of the world. Jesus doesn't want us to cocoon ourselves in a safe place. He wants us to be out there and to be salt and light. And if we're not doing that, we're just creating a little happy spiritual club in here. And that's not what we were meant to do. I've used this example before, and I don't remember who said it, but it's just so memorable to me. It's this idea that manure, if you spread it all out around, it really helps things grow. But if you pile it all together, it just stinks. We're not meant to just come in here and just enjoy this bubble. Don't get me wrong. Being the family of God together is who we're called to be. But we were never meant to just stay here and just form protective walls around ourselves and just have our own little spiritual bubble club. We are meant to be salt and light, to engage the world. And the third mistake that we make, I'm calling death by salt or heat. The third mistake we make is that we obliterate and overwhelm the world with our saltiness or our light. Now, don't hear me wrong. I think that being salt and light in an overwhelming way is often a good thing. But often we take what we think is right and true and we ram it down the throat of the world around us. There is such a thing as too much salt, right? How many of you like French fries? Now, have you ever gotten French fries that didn't have any salt on them? That's no good. Have you ever had salt or had French fries that had way too much salt in them? That's also not good. There's just the right amount of salt. There is just the right amount of light. Too much light is blinding. If you think about the light of a star, think about our sun. If the sun was brighter and hotter than it is, it would incinerate us. Life could not exist on planet Earth. Instead of putting a lamp on a stand, I'm wondering, sometimes do Christians pick up a flamethrower? Say, we're going to convert the world. And we just try to light everything on fire and just incinerate everything in our path. I love this saying. Again, I don't remember who said it, but it's so good. Perhaps we need more light with less heat. Maybe we could be salt and light and not be jerks about it. You may have seen the cartoon of the man who's standing before the pearly gates, and Peter is looking in his book, and he said, yes, you believed all the right things, and you're welcome to come in, but you kind of skipped the part about not being a jerk about all of it. And I think that a lot of us, a lot of Christians, we struggle to apply the right amount of salt, the right amount of light. Maybe God doesn't need us or want us to spend most of our time and energy trying to seize power in our country and overwhelm people who don't think like us with the force and rule of law to try to make them more moral. Maybe God's not inviting us to do that. Should we be salt and light? Should we try to change our culture for the good? Absolutely. But maybe the ways that Christians in this country in particular have done that over the last several decades, perhaps we've had not quite enough light and a little too much heat. Perhaps we've had that perfect steak cooked to perfection and then we've poured a whole bag of salt on top of it. And the world tastes it and just says, I can't stomach that. What Jesus is calling us to, I think, is Goldilocks discipleship. You know Goldilocks and the three bears? She comes in and one of the beds is too big and one of them is too small and one of them is just right. And then this one bowl of soup is too cold and the other bowl of soup is too hot and one bowl of soup is just right. And I think Jesus is inviting us to be salt and light in the world in a way that requires a great wisdom and lots of prayer to know what's the exact right amount of engagement that doesn't overwhelm or try to steamroll over people in the world and also doesn't retreat back over here into the spiritual bubble and not make an impact at all. What is the exact right amount of engagement? I think he's inviting us to struggle with that and to follow his lead in serving people. I love what Paul says in Colossians chapter 4. He says, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. He's not saying don't talk to anybody because you might offend them. But he's also saying don't rejoice in offending people because that's what we do because the world's going to hate us and so let's just offend as many people as possible. That's not what he says. He says, let your speech be seasoned with salt, full of grace. Full of grace is not intentionally offending people and not caring about the result. So some questions. Do your beliefs and statements about society and politics and culture in the world sound like the teachings of Jesus or more like your favorite news station? If it's the latter, could it be possible that we've lost some of our saltiness? Or if everyone around you agrees with you, could it be possible that you've run off everyone else who has a different perspective? If so, could it be possible that you've gone into salt overload? Could your light have too much heat? We obviously all struggle with this. None of us have it figured out, and we're invited to continue to read the teachings and ministry of Jesus to look for clues. How do we engage the world in loving ways, in ways that balance truth and love together? How do we do that? We all struggle to do that. I love how Randy Harris talks about all this in his teaching about the Sermon on the Mount. He says that Jesus isn't encouraging us to be something that we're not. Because see, if you're like me, you hear all this and you say salt and light and just knowing the Goldilocks right amount of all of that, we don't do that well. I don't know how to do that. I need wisdom. I fall so short all the time. And Randy Harris says, Jesus is not encouraging us to be something we are not. What did he say? What did Jesus say? You should try really hard to be salty. That's not what he said. Said, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Not try to be the light of the world, and if you don't get it right, it's okay, because grace, and you know, we're just all trying to figure this out. He says, look, this is who you are. You are the light of the world. You are a city set on a hill. You are the salt of the earth. Randy gives this great example of, he talks about marriage. He says the favorite part of a wedding, when he does a wedding, and I've been able to do a few weddings over the years, and this is also, it's just an incredible feeling. He says there's a part in the wedding that's his favorite. It's the part where he gets to say, I now pronounce you husband and wife. And Randy says, the reason I love that so much is because before I say those words, they're not married. And when I say the words, they are. And I get to be the one who, with my words, I get to speak into existence something new, to create a new reality that moments before did not exist. And I can echo what he says. It is a feeling of immense power. And it's a delight and a sacred thing. What I get to say over someone when they get married, you are husband and wife. It's what they are. And they'll spend the rest of their lives figuring out what that means, right? especially the men. They're like, oh yeah, I still don't have a clue. Could somebody please give me a handbook on how to understand this? If we could just start with things not to say, men, if we could, somebody could give us a list when we get married, don't ever say these words, that would be so, so helpful. We will spend the rest of our lives trying to figure out how to live as married people in relationship, how to live up to what we already are. You are husband and wife. You are married. You are a family. And now we have the rest of our lives to figure out what that means and how to try to go about that. Just like we spend all of our lives trying to follow Jesus well. But don't for a minute think that just because you feel like you haven't figured it out yet, that you're not salt and light. We hear all the time about what we are not. I spent years doing youth ministry, and I saw this over and over and over again. Young people, children who delighted in life and had innocent eyes and ears toward the world, and then they get to a certain age, and the message of the world starts to creep in. We would take trips with our kids to the lake, and sometimes I would hear conversations between our young ladies as they're getting ready to put on their swimsuits in the other room, and they would come out and they would be talking about how they don't feel like they look good enough. They didn't feel like that they measured up. And I think about being the mom or the dad of one of those young ladies, and I think about the way that I would respond knowing that my child is being made to feel like they're not enough, that they're not good enough. It would make me want to grab them by the shoulders and with tears in my eyes and say, who told you that you weren't good enough? Who told you that you didn't look good enough, that you're not smart enough, that you're not talented enough? Who sent you the message that you are not fine just the way that you are? As parents, we have this deep ache and pain in our hearts when we see that our children start to internalize these messages, that they're not good enough, that they don't measure up, and we just want to grab them. Teens, I want you to hear, your parents want you to know, they want to grab you, and they know it's not appropriate anymore because all you would do is be like, mom, dad, ew, gross. But they just want to grab you around the shoulders and say, you are my son, you are my daughter, and there is nothing about what the world has told you that can change that. Your identity is that you are my beloved child. Nothing can change that. And Jesus wants us to know today, not that you might be salt and light someday when you finish the diet or the exercise program or you get the degree or you succeed or accomplish or you get the promotion. You are salt and light. You are. He's said it. That settles it. Let's believe it. We are salt and light because he says we are. And the world needs us to be salt and light because the world is struggling to have hope and they need to see God's people rising up and being a city set on a hill, shining his light out into the world. And that is our invitation, to be salt and to be light in the perfect amount. So much is at stake. So may you be what Jesus says you already are in him. A city on a hill, a light to the world, the flavor of life, and the goodness of his grace. May you be salt and light, and may you know that God is on your side. He's with you. I want to invite us to stand, and as we sing this song, maybe you have been in a place where you don't feel like you've been salt or light and you're struggling. Maybe you just can't even hear those words. You just can't even believe that God would want to use you in his story. And if you have any need at all and you just want someone to talk to, our shepherds, our elders, our ministry staff will be in the aisles and up front and in the back. And if you have any need, please come find one of us. And we'd love to talk to you and hear your story. Be salt and light, church. That's who you are.